Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studio. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The Score!
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios until 11 o'clock as we do each and every Saturday morning. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking about a hot stove. The Cubs have set it simmer, maybe, and the White Sox, well, have yet to really plug in. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, interesting winter meetings in San Diego for both the Cubs and the White Sox. White Sox maybe laying the groundwork for some big deals down the road. The Cubs coming away with Bellinger and Teoane. So with that in mind, David, where would you like to begin today?
Well, we've got a lot of choices because it has been a busy week, a crazy week in Major League Baseball, where over $2.6 billion in contracts were signed throughout the league. But we want to keep things local here. We could go with Pat Hughes getting into the Hall of Fame. That was great. We're going to spend some time on that today and hear from Bob Costas, hear from Crane Kenny in interviews on the Score this week, because that was a special moment for everybody at the radio station and in Chicago. Bruce, the White Sox, the Cubs, we could go a lot of different directions. We could go down to St. Louis if we wish, but let's start with the Cubs. Let's start with a team that did actually sign a couple players. Want to get your thoughts. Cody Bellinger, 1 year, $17.5 million, a prove-it deal. Jameson Taillon, 4 years, $68 million. He plugs into the rotation. What did you think of those moves, and what do you think about what's next?
Well, you know, I remember back in the day when Andy McPhail took over the team back in 1994, and Tribune brought him in to run the team, and they asked him what he expected to do, and he said, well, I want to do something that makes sense for the long run here. So we might be initially slow, steady, and unspectacular. That was his quote. I think this is slow. I think it's steady coming off of last year, you know, with the addition of Semien and Suzuki. Stroman and Suzuki. I would say that this continues at this pace to show that the rebuild is getting much closer for the Chicago Cubs. Not quite there yet.
I understand where you're coming from. I think this is the offseason where slow and steady and unspectacular, while it's logical, that wasn't what I expected. I don't know if that was what we were promised either, or implied even. When you talk about intelligent spending, and when you talk about shortstop markets, and you talk about catcher markets, which Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins have openly done, I think that your sights are set on something that is very spectacular. And if you sign a shortstop that is one of the four on the market, and there's only two left, that would qualify as the opposite of unspectacular in my book. So that's what I want, Bruce. And I think that's what people have come to expect. But let's ask what people really think is going to happen. 312-644-6767. Let us know. What do you think about the Cubs moves? What do you think about the White Sox inactivity? What do you think overall? What did your team accomplish this week or fail to accomplish? You know what I'm saying, Bruce? I just expected more, or I think that we're evaluating a movie or reviewing it right in the middle of the movie, maybe.
Does the Swanson move, if it's Swanson over Correa, does that move the needle for you, David Haw? Does that move the needle for the Chicago Cubs? Do they become that contender in the National League Central that can jump over Milwaukee, who doesn't appear to be doing a heck of a lot to stay competitive right now, and jump into the mix with the St. Louis Cardinals, who may not be done yet and may be indeed involved in the same mix that they're in, and that is maybe going after Swanson, probably not Correa, but maybe Swanson as their shortstop after adding Wilson Contreras. That is how I look. I try to look at the Chicago Cubs. Are they ready to take a step up from third in the division to competing with St. Louis for the division title next year? And
If we're midway through the film and we want to wait till the end to review it, if you add Dansby Swanson, then all of a sudden the plot thickens. And you're set up for a very happy ending to the winter and to the offseason. Because, Bruce, I believe that Dansby Swanson, while not as dynamic as my number one priority, Carlos Correa, I think Dansby Swanson would allow you to lean into your priorities. And that is to become a more sound team defensively. Cody Bellinger, Gold Glover in center field. Ian Happ, Gold Glove left fielder. Then you get Swanson and Horner up the middle. Those two guys are both capable, better than average fielders, and those positions. Then behind the plate, then that's what I mean. If you get Swanson, the implication would be you're going to address the need behind the plate with a guy like maybe Christian Vasquez, maybe Sean Murphy. I don't know, but I like what I see because you have drawn me in, Jed Hoyer. You've gotten me to believe if you sign Dansby Swanson, you're serious about contending or competing in 2023.
David, I'll be direct. Who is your number three and number four hitter on a team that's going to contend for the National League Central?
That's a really good question. Right now,
I mean, let's say you sign Swanson. Is he truly a three or four hitter in your lineup? Are you going to spend $200 million in maybe 9 years investing in a guy that's a number five or number six hitter in your lineup, or a number two hitter in your lineup? Is that money well spent?
Well, that's a good question, Bruce. I think sometimes you pay for certain strengths, and maybe you're going to obviously overpay in free agency. Dansby Swanson might not be a $185 million player in the eyes of many baseball people, and maybe the analytics will make that seem like a foolish investment. Sometimes you're pressed by need, and that dictates what you're going to spend. Who does bat third in this Cubs lineup that we're putting together on the fly here on a Saturday morning? I don't know who that is right now because it's incomplete, but Dansby Swanson, to answer the question directly, no, I would not want to see him bat third or fourth, but I do think you're a Cubs organization in position to have to maybe consider overpaying for a premium player.
Yeah. I mean, look, Bellinger might be that addition. He might be able to bat 1 through 5. If he comes back and he peaks out, you know, these are big ifs. You can bat him in any of those positions. You're going to be a stronger team. He might be your three. He might be your four. But as it stands right now, okay, you cannot put the Chicago Cubs close to the St. Louis Cardinals. They're just not there yet, okay?
Not yet. I agree with that. We don't know where Correa is going. The Giants are talking to him. The Yankees may get involved. We don't know what Swanson is going to do. By the way, he has another long-term commitment that's prioritized his time today. The word is he's getting married. But Mallory Pugh, the fine player for the Chicago Red Stars, is his fiancée, soon-to-be wife. So we wish them all the best. And maybe it will be in Chicago. Maybe it won't. But, Bruce, the point is that this may take a little bit more time than people want it to take. Meanwhile, down in St. Louis, Wilson Contreras signed with the Cardinals. What, in your mind, did that do to the Cardinals as a front runner in the division, maybe in the competing for a National League pennant? And just secondarily, what did it do to you, and what was your reaction just because of the Cub-Cardinal rivalry?
Well, St. Louis has gotten stronger offensively, okay? I mean, they had a good offensive team, not a great one. You know, you have first and third. You have all-stars. You have future Hall of Famers playing first and third, arguably, with Goldschmidt and Arenado. As far as the rest of the team goes, it's one of It's a great defensive team. It's a great base running team. It's a good enough pitching team. Not a great starting staff of pitchers. Good bullpen. They're not necessarily a 100-win team, but they are certainly the class of the National League Central. And if you're the Cubs and you're in a rebuild, David, that's where you have to go. You can't just say we're a playoff team, contending team, even though you have expanded playoffs. You have to say, where are we at in our own division? And are we good enough to play with the Cardinals? That's how I think you have to look at it.
It will remain to me one of baseball's greatest mysteries, why the Cubs could not find a way to love Wilson Contreras. I think that it was personal. I don't know that you can defend it professionally. They are, and they have, and they will. I know, texters, I know from ranting about this all week long on the Mullin Haas show that there is a difference in the ERA for pitchers who threw to Yan Gomes and pitchers that threw to Wilson Contreras. I accept that. I do think that Wilson Contreras is a championship-caliber catcher. I think they won a championship with him as their catcher. So I understand all that. Here we go, though. The Cardinals, that's what makes it even harder to take. You knew this was coming. This is a team. You're going to see him for the next 5 years make you regret this decision. And this is what Wilson Contreras had to say when introduced on Friday in St. Louis about a meeting he had that made the decision easier for him.
We had a great meeting. I felt the connection right away with Marmo and Mo. And I made the best decision. I did make the best decision. And I know that I came here to succeed Yadier Molina, the greatest catcher of the last two decades. And for me, it's an honor to be wearing this uniform and be behind the plate.
Bruce, seemed personal. What did you think? What do you expect?
So the last day of the season, Wilson and I said goodbye, and he knew, and I knew he wasn't coming back. And I said, what was realistically the last time they offered you money? And he said, well, the last contract they offered was in 2018, and it was for $35 million, okay? It was for 5 years, okay? So at that time, he said, we've negotiated this year and last year, but there's never been any money mentioned by the Cubs as to what their offer would be. So he pretty much knew that realistically he was moving on. Why this happened, David? You know, we've been over it ad nauseum. I think a lot of people have been over it. They just didn't think he was their catcher for the future. They didn't think he was the guy to put the fingers down and call the game for him. We know he's a good hitter. We know he has tremendous energy. We know he's a outstanding teammate when it comes to bringing it every day. But to David Ross and to the front office of the Cubs, he was not the guy to put the fingers down as they move forward in this next rebuild. And you have to include Ross because not every manager is totally involved in organizations and where they're going direction-wise. But I can tell you 100% that David Ross, being the catcher that he was during his career, being the important person that he is in this organization beyond just being the manager, had a tremendous say-so in whether Wilson Contreras was going to come back or not.
I knew it. I knew it. It was Rossi. Rossi all along.
No, I mean,
you're never going to love the guy that took a pass away from you.
Don't blame it on David Ross.
Okay.
Don't blame it on David Ross because the idea that he wasn't the catcher that they wanted for the future doesn't make Wilson Contreras a bad player, a bad guy, a guy that didn't do a good job with the Cubs. He did all those things, and they appreciated it. It was just making a decision for the future. They felt he wasn't an everyday guy, and I will guarantee you that they're right in one area. Wilson is never going to be catching 120 games again, okay? So he's going to be a 100-game catcher, tops. He's going to DH. He's going to play first base once in a while if Goldschmidt takes a day off. He's going to play the outfield once in a while if he has to. They'll find a way to get 140 games and 550 at-bats out of Wilson Contreras, but it won't all be behind the plate. Nobody should fool themselves to think that Wilson Contreras is going to be catching 120 games.
Score Listener Line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's where we find McGee is in Park Forest. Good morning, McGee. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning. It's Mickey.
I'm sorry, Mickey. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Guys, I pretty much think the same thing. I blame David Ross because there's no reason. If the Cardinals thought he was good enough to be their catcher, the Cubs could have used him the same way, some first base, some outfield, some DH. But watch, the guy that they get is going to be less of a catcher. He's going to hit 220. They're going to say, oh, this guy is such and such a thing, but he will not be the catcher that Wilson is. Hoyer is no Theo. I'm still upset with him for letting Darvish go for nothing. So he has a lot to prove to me. And if they don't get one of those shortstops, I'm even going to be more upset with Hoyer.
Thank you, Mickey. Appreciate the phone call. Lot to say there, Bruce. Let's go to another Cub fan. Steve is in Peoria. He has thoughts on Carlos Correa versus Dansby Swanson and that possibility.
Good morning, Steve.
Morning, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Well, thanks, guys. My question is this. With the new rulings of no shift, how does that affect who they should be going for? I've heard, I guess, Correa is supposed to have a better range, but how close is Swanson in range to Correa?
Thanks, Steve. Well, appreciate the phone call. Bruce?
Swanson's an excellent range guy, but so so was the guy that played the position for the Cubs last year. I mean, you look at what he did and the range that he showed. Obviously, if you're bringing another shortstop, you're going to take Horner and move him to second base, and then you're going to have great range up the middle. I think the Cubs are thinking that's a possibility. Is what the caller just said, what Steve said, is that with no shifting, your defense, you have to have more range than you've had at second base for a long time now. So it's not just bringing in another shortstop. It's moving a guy over to second base that has a tremendous amount of range over there.
See, I think that's a really interesting and important distinction. My fixation or saying that the Cubs have to get one of the big four shortstops is also influenced by understanding that Nico Horner is versatile enough to move to second base, and because of the rules changes and because of all the realities that Steve just pointed out, Dansby Swanson is an excellent fielder. So is Carlos Correa, and he adds a lot of other dynamic things. But I don't know that I would be this convicted to feel this way, Bruce, if I didn't have as much confidence in Nico Horner's ability to do that. We have seen him play there, and we know what he can offer in the lineup. I think your priority one after addressing the offseason and the winter meetings then becomes locking up guys like Horner and Happ to contract extensions because of his value to the team. My interest in these shortstops has nothing to do and should not be interpreted as a lack of confidence in Nico Horner. Quite the opposite. He's my favorite Cub right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if there was a feel-good story last year for the Cubs on guys that have been around, it was certainly Horner was the guy. I mean, you know, Happ had a great year, and it was a coming-out year for him. And Contreras had an outstanding year. It was fun to watch morale grow. But the team was really most buoyed by the fact that Horner took that step up and proved that he could play shortstop in the major leagues every day and do a really good job of it. That said, with the shift changing, teams have to be more cognizant of how do we defend? How does run prevention stay the way it was or close to it without shifting on left-handed hitters? And that's where your second baseman becomes even more important now than it has over the last two or three years.
Well, we're just getting started here, and the Cubs are too in this offseason. Crane Kenny on the Mully and Haw Show on Friday said, this is just the third inning of the offseason for the Cubs. There's still a lot of baseball to be played in that context, and we will hear from Crane Kenny when we come back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
I think the Cubs are in a small group of the finalists and the favorites for Swanson. But I think, Matt, to your point, it's going to take that eight-year range, around $200 million. Maybe they get him on a really lucrative seven-year deal. But I think that $200 million is about the range that we're talking about for Dansby Swanson. And unless the Cubs can get there, they'll probably land somewhere else.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was John Morosi on the afternoon show Friday talking about the Cubs' potential interest in Dansby Swanson, whose price keeps going up because Carlos Correa has yet to sign, and Xander Bogaerts signed for $280 million, Bruce. So the price of poker just increased. What do you think about Swanson and the options now that he has, because they are more than probably he had a couple days ago, just because the Giants missed out on Aaron Judge and the Padres swooped in and took Xander Bogaerts?
He's a nice player, David, but really, 9 years? I'm hearing that it's going to go past eight, and it's going to go 9 or 10. That's what they're looking for. Who is playing poker in this hand, David? That's what the Cubs have to also figure out. Are the Giants going to go that direction if indeed they miss out on Correa? I doubt it, because they're looking for a superstar. They missed out on Judge. They're in on Correa. They'll move their shortstop for the last 10 years, Crawford, over to third base if they sign Correa. Swanson is not, it's not that for them. It's a different subject there. There's a different dynamic with the Giants going after Correa. It's a different dynamic, I think, for Minnesota going after Correa than it is for Swanson. Swanson might have fewer people to go to. If indeed Correa signs with the Giants, I don't see a bigger market for Swanson. Tell me where Swanson's going to go. Is that a fallback plan for Minnesota or San Francisco?
It's debatable. You can talk yourself out of things or you can talk yourself into things. That's the nature of free agency, depending on how much money you have to spend and how glaring your needs are. And the guy who is in charge of the budget, the guy who knows what the numbers are, not in charge of the budget, that would be Tom Ricketts, but his president of business operations is Crane Kenny, and he was on the Mullenhaw show on Friday. Zach Zaidman was sitting in, and so I asked Crane about the approach to this offseason and just where the Cubs are in that pursuit of free agents and fixing their team.
Funny, if you look at it over time, you know, for me, this is one of the 22nd winter meetings that I've been a part of. You know, it used to be you saw a lot of activity at the GM meetings and the winter meetings, and you kind of went into the holidays with a lot of transactions behind you and your roster, not set, but significantly changed. And that's all changed. You know, it's funny it used to be that, you know, the winter meetings were full of meetings, you know, and the GM meetings where the GMs were all huddled together. And now the GMs are calling each other from the same location, which, you know, this, the advent of the internet and sort of technology has allowed the winter meetings to start kind of, you know, 10 days after the World Series and end, you know, sometime in January. So, yeah, you know, the vast majority of free agents are still out there. The big names have come off the board, but there's a ton of talent still to be added. And then the trade market really opens up in earnest after the big free agents are gone. So I think, you know, we may be in the third inning of our offseason in terms of how the roster will look, you know, come February.
A lot of at-bats left, Bruce, if you're only in the third inning. A lot of opportunities to make something happen.
Look, I like what the Cubs have done. Adding Bellinger to me was a very underrated, safe move that could pay off big for them this year. Taillon is an outstanding pitcher, coming back with a new elbow ligament the last 2 years and throwing 177 innings last year for the Yankees. I love that move, okay? I like their rotation much better than it was in the past. I think they're getting close to competing in that division. If you believed in the 39-31, the last 70 games of 2022, they're moving forward. There's some trepidation in counting on that, okay? That's continuing on that guys like Thompson and guys like Steele are going to continue to move upward, continue to move where they need to go as far as that move to be top pitchers in the National League. Hendricks coming back from an injury. Stroman staying healthy all year. There's a lot of ifs in there. All that said, if they're healthy, it looks like a better pitching rotation. They still have some things to do. And again, Swanson or Correa makes them a better team. Do they make them a contending team this year in the Central? That's what I want to know.
Crane said two things that were very interesting in the context of the big picture and also here in Chicago. I think, number one, that the trade market has still yet to get going because we're waiting for free agency to settle. The other thing is that he said was there are good players still available, Bruce, and it made me think of, okay, there are guys out there, and this is where it pertains to the White Sox as well, who have not really, as I kind of kidded facetiously starting the show, they haven't really plugged in the hot stove yet because they haven't really done anything except for a lot of talking. And I think we'll get to the Sox in depth a little bit more in the 10 o'clock hour. But a guy like Michael Brantley, for instance, still out there. He's like the perfect White Sox signee, right? A 35-year-old with left-handed pop and a guy you could envision them pursuing. Michael Conforto, still out there. There are other players that are not getting the ticker treatment at the bottom of the screen, but guys that you could envision either the Sox or maybe even the Cubs pursuing in a way that doesn't make as big of a splash as the Swansons and the Correas, but are still out there ready to be signed.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. There's plenty, and I agree with Crane. There's plenty of time left. This is December 10th. You know, we don't go to spring training for, 2 months now? So from that perspective, what we've seen in the past couple of years are some of the top players in the game signing and being moved later in the year. You know, because of last year in the lockout, everything was done late. This year, money's being spent, as you said, you know, over $2 billion, almost $3 billion, you know, committed out there for players, and more will be spent here over the next month or so. I would say impact is so different, though, with Correa and with Swanson. There's
totally. I mean, I agree with that.
And people say, oh, we have to get one. I don't believe in that. What is your objective here? Do you have a main objective? If you're going after Correa, you're going to spend $300 million. You expect him to bat third or fourth in your lineup. You expect him to be centerpiece for your rebuild at age 28. He's actually younger than Swanson is, which is amazing because of all that he's accomplished in his career.
And yeah, he is, and that's why I want him, Bruce, and that's why I think that sometimes you have to make exceptions to your rule. Your rule makes sense. It's logical. You can discuss it in boardrooms and press boxes and have a lot of people nodding their heads that, boy, you make a lot of sense. Sometimes I want Tom Ricketts to go crazy. Sometimes I want the Cubs to make us think, what are they doing? Did they spend what? $325 million? What? And this is why when Crane Kenny was on the phone Friday, I wanted to ask him, okay, we know Carlos Correa, that price tag, because of what is being spent on shortstops, if Bogarts went for 280, it's going to take north of $300 million in terms of an investment to get Carlos Correa. So I asked him about what it would take to get Carlos Correa.
Well, I'm not going to help Scott Boras out with too many words about where we'd go or where we wouldn't go. But, you know, we're a fortunate club, and I've said this, and people don't always love hearing it, but, you know, our owners have been incredibly straightforward from the day they bought the club, which was, we're not taking a nickel out of this thing. Everything you earn, Crane, you can dedicate to the baseball operations and to the stadium renovation and other things that you think and Jed thinks are necessary to help us win games. So we have an ownership team that says, listen, if you made a dollar, you can spend it. And that means that the success of the organization on the business side leads directly to the resources Jed has to spend on players. And as I said earlier, he has a pretty healthy amount of money to spend still. So I think some of the, you know, you see a cycle here if you've been around long enough to right after a CBA gets signed in the first year of labor peace, that owners and team executives get pretty aggressive in that first free agent market, knowing you've got 4 or 5 years left on a CBA where you won't have to worry about work stoppage. And I think we're seeing that here. And, you know, I don't know who will, quote unquote, win the offseason. I think last year the Rangers were considered the winners when they signed Semien and Seager. And, you know, I don't know who will be deemed the winner of this free agent class. But, you know, resources are available. Jed will spread them as he sees fit. And we're going to play better baseball next year.
Bruce, I want your reaction, because all I heard was he has a pretty healthy amount of money to spend here.
They did last year as well, David. It's the idea of being intelligent. We've heard that term from the Cubs front office for 4 or 5 months now. Intelligent spending. Well, when you're given 8, 9, and 10 year contracts, David, there's nothing intelligent about that.
Bruce, okay? I disagree with you totally. Bruce, are you going to tell me the Philadelphia Phillies are unintelligent? They spent their way to the World Series. They won a pennant because of their intelligent spending. They signed a lot of guys long-term. You look at their roster, they've made a lot of long-term commitments. They just made another one at Trey Turner. That's not dumb.
I think they won like 86 or 87 games, Dave.
They were in the World Series.
They got hot. They got hot at the end.
They got hot and they were in the World Series. Why?
Yeah.
Because Bryce Harper had the swing of his life. Because Bryce Harper was there.
He
had the gumption to say, I am going to defy baseball logic. I'm going to dig in deep, and I'm going to sign this guy to a 13-year deal.
It's the same guy, same team that was swept by the Cubs in three games.
Oh,
in
stop
September.
It. They were in the World Series.
Wait a minute, David. When the Phillies went into the playoffs, did you say that's your National League champion?
No, but they did. They won it, Bruce. I'm talking about history, not speculation.
I'm not arguing with that. I'm saying, are they the favorite in their division to win?
Right now? No.
Yeah.
You know why? Because the Mets spent crazy this offseason.
Okay.
They have a replacement for Jacob deGrom, who went to Texas. Oh, by the way, let's dig deep and get Justin Verlander. Let's go get another Cy Young Award winner.
I know. It's crazy. And there's no guarantee they're going to win either.
I would like to debate the sanity of Tom Ricketts to say, oh, boy, is he losing his mind? He just spent $300 million on a player that's going to put him over the top.
Well, they spent $155 million on a pitcher. They spent $184 million on an outfielder.
One of
those deals worked out great. The other one helped you win a World Series. So you're right. Maybe my theory is wrong that there are intelligent 10-year deals. I have never seen one. I think if you are ready to win a World Series and ready to contend and win right now, I think a 10-year deal makes sense. I just don't think 10-year deals make sense for the Chicago Cubs right now, unless you're ready to say, "By the way, we're dropping the other foot, and we're going to go out there and we're going to sign other free agents. We're going to trade for other people. We're going to win this year and next year."
I know that it's not recommended and it's not what you want to do in terms of a decade-long commitment and the financial ramifications of that. I just think sometimes you may be backed into a corner because you look around baseball, and that is what you do when you are a big market team, and the Cubs are a big market team. But it's a good debate. It's an ongoing conversation, and we will do it civilly, right? And I guess Sean Sears asked a good question.
Most of the time, it'll be
Bruce,
civil.
When you're not insulting me, you're actually a very easy, good guy to talk baseball
with. I always respect everything you say. You're well thought out. You're one of the great reporters and writers in the history of Chicago. So I have no axe to grind there, David. I'm pleased to have you as my partner every single week talking baseball. But 10-year contracts and intelligence, I think they don't necessarily go in the same sentence for me ever. Because when you look at Albert Pujols' contract with the Angels, you look at Miguel Cabrera's contract with Detroit. There were two different things. The Angels never won. They didn't even go to the playoffs more than once while Pujols was there. Cabrera was a difference maker for Detroit. They went to the World Series a few times with Cabrera. Maybe you can say that was more intelligent. Right now, you know, you're watching Cabrera the last 4 years, you know, hobble along and be a singles hitter. It's not fun. Did they get they got to go to a few World Series with him? It worked out on that end. But is that intelligent spending? That's all I have to say. They brought up the term intelligence. I'm jumping on it. Okay.
I appreciate where you're coming from. It is an ongoing debate and conversation, and we will continue to have it. But speaking of people who actually are all-time greats, Pat Hughes went into the Hall of Fame, and he had a lot to say. Bob Costas was on this radio station. We want to hear what he had to say. What a great person to celebrate, and we will do that next inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
But the real essence of baseball and the real connection to the audience is the unique day-in, day-out nature of baseball, especially on the radio, where the announcer isn't just a good broadcaster. He has to be a good companion to his audience, and he's connected to that team and its fortunes day in, day out, year in, year out. And Pat has that credential.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haugh, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was the voice of broadcasting legend Bob Costas, who was on The Score on Friday afternoon, talking about our good friend and baseball immortal now, the guy who provides the voice that is the soundtrack of so many summers. Pat Hughes, who was the winner of the Ford Frick Award this week, Bruce, and informed of the reality that he's going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Could not happen to a nicer guy. The epitome of class, grace, and eloquence. Just terrific honor for Pat Hughes.
David, when I think of Pat Hughes, I think of the tremendous consistency that he brings to the booth 27 years in a row now for the Chicago Cubs. And by that, I mean, you don't know if Pat's had a good day, a bad day, whether things are going right with his family, whether his car started right or not, whether he had to take an Uber to work. Pat gives you the same uplifting, well-reported broadcast every single day, no matter what. He is the voice of summer for the Chicago Cubs fans. He is the most consistent guy that I know. And to be great at broadcasting, in particular for baseball broadcasters and more directly for radio broadcasters who have to be your eyes and ears for every single pitch, nobody does it better than Pat. There are people that are as good. There are people that have been as good, but I don't think there's anybody that does it better or more consistently than Pat Hughes. And that is the model of why of what you want to go into the Hall of Fame, and that's why Pat's going into the Hall of Fame. He doesn't have to be spectacular every night. He has to be damn good and entertaining and informative every single day for 3 to 4 hours. David, try it sometime. It's probably one of the most difficult things to do well in the sports industry.
Yes, Pat Hughes, the style matches the substance, and the humility is the thing that stands out as much as any of his qualities. And that's what you heard when he tried to put into his own words, as only he can, what it meant to him when he found out that he was going into the Hall of Fame.
It is the best honor that I could have ever hoped to have. It's really a dream come true. It's something that has not yet sunk in, and I don't know if it will. I don't know if the Cubs Hall of Fame has sunk in yet. I just feel how fortunate I am to work in a city like Chicago with the fan base we have, to work with Ron Coomer and Zach Zaidman, to work for the Cubs, to work for Crane Kenny and Tom Ricketts and his siblings, to work for Mitch Rosen. And Mitch is the program director of The Score, the flagship station of the Cubs radio network. I just feel so lucky, and I have a great supportive family, my wife Trish and my daughters Janelle and Amber. I just feel so very lucky and fortunate that so many things in my life have turned out as well as they have. It's more than any one person really, frankly, deserves.
You know, Bruce, Mitch Rosen, Ron Coomer, Crane Kenny, they were there when Pat found out, and it was captured on video by the Cubs, who put that on their website and their Twitter feed, and it was just so gratifying to see somebody that humbled by that news.
Well, I'm proud of, and I think you are too, of being on the committee that helps elect the Chicago Cub Hall of Fame inductees, and I'm proud of the fact that I was a part of that, and I'm sure you are too, is him going into the Cub Hall of Fame this year. That was the impetus for him getting going here. I know Bob Costas, who you heard you know, in that soundbite about Pat was very instrumental in letting other broadcasters and people who were involved in the voting session for the Frick Award to understand how great Pat is and how consistent and how well-deserving he was. There were tremendous other broadcasters skipped over, including Steve Stone of the White Sox, who is well-deserving. Tom Hamilton, one of the great broadcasters in the history of the Cleveland Indians, he's going to be in there. Steve is hopefully going to be in there. So this is a tremendous honor. I'm kind of sad only one broadcaster gets in a year, because these people that are getting up there in their late 60s, early 70s, you know, they should be able to smell the roses and enjoy this. So I know one a year is the way they do it. I'd like to see more of these people in there and enjoy this later in their career and after they retire.
Quick story about Pat Hughes before we break. Everybody overcomes something. It's not as easy as Pat makes it sound. It's a difficult job. But it's particularly difficult when you overcome a health crisis like he did 8 years ago now. And I wrote about it 5 years ago in the Chicago Tribune after he approached me. And I told the story on the air on Thursday. And it just bears mentioning in brief detail, Bruce, because Pat Hughes underwent three surgeries in a 14-month period at the end of the 2014 season when his throat started feeling different, thought it was bronchitis, it was dysplasia. He had precancerous lesions removed. He took me into his doctor's appointment and gave me that kind of access with the photographer. We wrote about it. And he overcame that, and he was proud of that. And I think when you hear him sound so smooth and eloquent, it's not always as easy as he does make it sound. The moral of the story is this also. He wanted to tell me his story. He's a very private, humble man, as we know. But he thought maybe somebody could learn from his example. And here, a month ago, I heard from Jonathan Brandmeier, the legendary Chicago radio guy, who sent me an email thanking me and getting a hold of Pat because he saw the story when he Googled, and he was going through something similar. And he contacted Pat for answers, for help. Pat connected him with the doctor who did the surgery and dealt with him. Johnny B is back, and now he's doing his own YouTube. He's doing his own broadcasting. Johnny B is doing what Johnny B does. And it's because, in his mind, Pat Hughes was able to share his story and lend his advice and expertise. And that just tells you what kind of a guy Pat Hughes is. And we are all so happy and proud to be affiliated and associated with a guy like that.
Well said, David, and well done on your part as well. On top of all this, Pat Hughes is a wonderful human being and a really good friend, and I'm proud to call Pat Hughes my friend. That is the essential part of this, because when you see a friend get the accolades that he deserves, and I hopefully will be there when he gives his speech at the Hall of Fame next July. This is going to be a great moment for him, his family, and all of his friends, and all Cub fans who really love Pat Hughes.
From the Hall of Fame back to the hot stove, what are the White Sox doing, and when will they actually do something? We will talk about that next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.